Do you know what, Jen? I don't think I've ever looked better in my life. I think I'm at the peak of my physical prowess.
I think you are.
At the moment. And yeah. I would love to share that with people. I'd love people to be able to see me in the flesh.
It's selfish to keep this.
It is. This amount of radiance needs to be shared. So I thought what I would do is invite people along to see me in real life.
To be in the same room at the Museum of Comedy.
At the Museum of Comedy, because comedy is what I do most of the time.
And you belong in a museum.
No.
It was, how rude.
My self-esteem had climbed and now it's back down on the floor. But no, I love the Museum of Comedy and I'm going to go there and I'm going to take my raw magnetism with me on Wednesday the 24th of April.
Can I come too?
You can. Just try not to sort of detract from my glow, you know.
Okay.
We are going to have the magnificent Jenny Ryan, a magnificent guest.
Ooh.
TBA. Wednesday the 24th of April. Put it in your diaries. Bring your sunglasses because I am shining.
Yeah, get your tickets now. The link is in our social media or from the Museum of Comedy website.
Oh, please do come. Jen's all right as well.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What's your name?
Jenny Ryan.
Correct. What's my name?
Lucy Porter.
Correct. What are we doing?
We're making a podcast all about quizzing.
Correct. What's it called?
Fingers on Buzzers.
Correct. Oh, hello. You're very good keeping the applause going until we got here.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
That's quite awkward, wasn't it?
A nice bunch. So it is delightful to have you all here at the beautiful Museum of Comedy. Ooh.
Have you had a look round? Very excited. Yeah. The Goons Bonquette is my favourite exhibition.
My favourite is there's a rising damp area, which is so...
I mean, we are underground, so...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's so damp they couldn't fit anything else in there, so it's all good. So we are Lucy and Jenny, and together we are...
Fingers on Buzzers!
Yes!
There's no predicting how I'm going to sing that, so thanks for trying.
I thought you did well. You joined in very well there. So this is the live version of the podcast that we've been doing for some years now. We started in 1932, before podcasts were even a thing.
Steam-powered wireless.
Oh, those were the days. We absolutely adore quizzing and we want to share that love, and we have the best guests ever. Tonight we have not four, not five, but two amazing fabulous guests for you. So we'll introduce them later. You know who it is because you bought tickets, right? But we'll keep the suspense going. For anyone who isn't familiar with our oeuvre, I'll do a little quiz, which is about past guests that we've had on our podcast. And this could be a chance for you to win some of the prizes on offer this evening.
Ooh.
So, Jen, what have we got on the prize table
tonight? We have got some off-brand tinned cocktails. We have got some off-brand, not an aero.
Well, it's from Aldi and it's called Bubbly Milk.
Off-brand, not a Bounty, it's called Romeo. I'm not sure how, where's that connection?
Yeah, it just makes you think
Bounty
of...
like the other Beckham kid.
Yeah.
We've got some off-brand Colin Caterpillars. They're called Walter Worm. We've also got some board games. We've got PSI, which stands for Psychology Slander Intuition, and it is almost impossible to play. I've tried. And we also
it's
have...
endorsed by Kenny Everett.
It is. And David Jensen.
David Jensen.
And also Nick Knowles is here in spirit, if not in body, in the form of the Who Dares Wins board game, which is another classic. Much easier to play than PSI.
I'm quite glad he's not here in body, I'll be honest. But I went to the Tip this week, always a treat. Ooh. And they have a bit in the Tip where you can go and collect things that, you know, they put out things they think people will want.
Did they now?
And the Who Dares Wins board game was there.
Not this one, though. This has come straight from my cupboard, which came from a charity shop originally, which yes. may have come from another Tip.
But as far as we know, this one is not from the Tip. So it's.
I didn't know that, because every time I go to the Tip, they don't let you go in.
Yeah.
I keep seeing things. They banned me.
She keeps trying to climb in. So I'm going to tell you, in order to win these fabulous prizes, I'm going to tell you some facts about people that we have had on the podcast, and I will invite you to guess who they might be. So the first guest I'm going to direct you towards is somebody who crashed out of Pointless Celebrities for saying that chocolate is an ingredient of spaghetti bolognese.
Powerful.
Whoa, straight in James Acaster.
Oh.
Who do we think got that first? I mean, I think it was you there in the lovely sports top. What's your name? Sorry. Ed.
Which off-brand item would you care to win from the prize table? Or on-brand if you're a big fan of Nick Knowles. Absolutely enjoy those. I want a review of them because I'm a big fan of a Colin Caterpillar.
Yeah, they're nice.
But if they're cheaper.
I actually prefer them. I prefer the fizzy version is actually nicer than Haribo or Mott's. Anyway.
We really should do like a consumer affairs program as well.
We really should.
Spin off.
So somebody... In fact, no, I'll tell you who this one is. So Zoe Lyons, she was saying about hosting a quiz, she said there's certain words that she finds difficult to pronounce, which is not a Zoe problem. It's a quiz show host problem, isn't it?
It is. Some have a banned list of words that the question writers are not allowed to put in any question or answer. The most extensive one of those was a certain winking redhead. It was a large document you had to check before you wrote any questions about Greg Rosetsky or Antarctica.
Yeah. And Robinson can't say Greg Rosetsky. That's a fact. But Zoe Lyons said she has problems with the words decision, initiative, and which herb?
Oregano.
Oregano.
Oh, what an answer. So I would have gone coriander right away.
Yeah. Turmeric, whatever that is.
Some Romeo bars, a bubbly.
I'll have a masochist, so PSI, please.
Oh, now we're talking. Oh, I'm going to have to dismantle the prize.
The PSI board game. So David Jensen says, I've never been so invited all my life. I can't actually see what it says.
I've never been so insulted in all my life. But how do you sue your 9-year-old daughter? Chris Tarrant. My girlfriend called me a maggot. My agent called me a wet weekend in Margate. And my best friends called me a battery chicken. It was a marvellous evening. What ringing endorsements those are. Enjoy or probably don't enjoy, if that's anything to go by.
So well done you, my darling. Should we do one more?
Let's do one more. I'm just going to drop prizes on the floor while that's happening.
Kate Botley, the Reverend Kate Botley.
Right, yes, the Reverend Kate. Who's give us some respect.
And she, we went on a cruise with her. It was amazing. She was wild, filthy. She knows
her
all
husband
the
can't take his drink either.
No,
but he did not know that you're not supposed to drink Cafe Patron in half pints.
Yeah, poor Graham. He had a day in the cabin. So, in Kate Botley's church quiz, she always made sure that there were the questions with two specific people as the answer. One of them was Jesus. And who was the other person that she always gave as an option or as an answer? I'll give you some clues. Oh,
something's come through from the back of the room.
It wasn't Dale Winton, but we love
but we like to hear him invoked, don't we? May you rest in peace.
Jesus, Dale Winton, and completing the Holy Trinity, it's an ex-footballer, now pundit, Gary Lineker. There we go. We'll give it over there. Gary Lineker was the correct answer.
Are you a chocolate lover?
I am, but I quite fancy the off-brand... Is it the cocktail?
Mm. Oh, well, I say cocktail.
Good choice.
Oh, yeah, it's a passion fruit martini made by Stefanoff, that well-known vodka maker.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
this.
Delightful. We've got some tuned in audience members. That's good to hear, isn't it?
Do you know
it?
Lidl's off-brand vodka for a time is called Putinoff?
Oh.
I think they've changed it now.
I would hope so.
So, without further ado, I think we've warmed you up. We've given you a little idea of what we're about. Shall we bring on a guest?
Yeah!
He is an absolute dream. He's a comedy legend. He is a darts whiz. And he's just an all-round gorgeous individual. Please give it up for Tim Vine!
Hello. Oh, what an absolute thrill to be here. Where are we? No, it's wonderful. What a great... I've just been enjoying all that, and then you suddenly said I was coming on. I went, oh, great. Yes, how lovely. I'm in the middle here. I feel like I'm almost in charge. Welcome to my show.
That's later. You get to host later. We'll build up to that.
Yes, would you?
Yes, we've devised a format for you to host. Because actually, we have had Tim on the podcast before, as some of you may know, and we largely talked about your hosting of the Channel 5...
Go on.
Yeah, what's the word I would use to describe
show,
it?
You could say show.
Yeah.
Quiz?
Yeah, I wanted to think of something. It's a legend.
Cult classic.
Cult classic, thank you, Jen.
Well,
Whittle.
Whittle, yes.
Who remembers Whittle?
We'll put the cheer in the edit after that. Yes, that was great fun. I did 132 of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I remembered when I was doing five a day, I used to think to myself, you know, some were better than others. And it was quite a shock when they all came out one at a time. And I'd have to say, I'd see one and think, good grief, I'm going to sit through half an hour of that. Oh, my goodness.
But, well, we loved it and we loved talking to you about it. And one of the things that we did last time was because Tim wrote an extensive catalogue of jokes to
I
go
did.
With all the questions.
Yes. I went to the shoe shop. I said, I want my shoes fixed. He said, sold. I said, I want my shoes fixed. It was a big hit.
And the sheer output of jokes was incredible. So what we've done to warm you up is we've got a little quiz where I'm going to ask a question from Whittle, okay. And then you will tell me what joke you think you said.
Oh, that's clever. Crikey. And this is not something I've been prepared for.
No.
So, all right, go on then. Here we go.
So the question was, see, you can play along with the questions.
The first one about shoes.
Well, it's someone who wears shoes.
Right.
Boris Becker. What age was Boris Becker when he first won Wimbledon? The format of the show is you get options. I don't think you need them, but was he 6, 17, 23 or 42?
He was 17, wasn't he? Yeah.
17.
And then I probably said, I was playing tennis with a napkin. I said, don't serve yet.
That's very good. Do you want to see what you actually said?
Yeah, go on then.
You said, someone said to me, oh, Boris Becker, you should see his forearms. And I said, well, if he's got forearms, he's definitely going to win. Very good. Yep. Very strong. Yes. Very strong.
He could do doubles on his own.
The next question was, in Signs of the Zodiac, the symbol for Capricorn is which animal? Is it a goat, a beaver, a gazelle or a bull?
Goat.
Yes, it was.
I feel confident I might know what the joke is for this.
Ooh.
Only because I've only got one Sign of the Zodiac joke.
Okay.
I went to the pet shop. I said, can I buy a goldfish? He said, do you want an aquarium? I said, I don't care what star sign he is. Is that the one on there?
I'm here to tell you, you've got two horoscope jokes. The other one being, I don't believe in all that zodiac rubbish, but then I'm a Pisces, I'm very sceptical.
Right, okay.
That one got a groan. You stick with your bench.
I'm going to go with the other one.
The next question was, the Taj Mahal is close to which city? Aberdeen, Andover, Agra or Amritsar? They're already anticipating the joke. It's a lovely thing. So which city is the Taj Mahal close to? Shout it out if you know it.
Agra.
Agra.
There may be an Agra thing going on there. Is there in the joke? But if not, I'd say I went to a jumble sale in India. It was a Bring Mumbai. I was in this Indian restaurant and Blake came up to me. He said, "Curry, okay?" I said, "I might do some of loving when I finish this." Karaoke, sir. No.
I mean, I'd say better than the one you did.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Which was Agra. People who hate that city are agoraphobic, apparently.
Right. Yeah.
It is all right.
Well, there we are.
Let's do another one. Which part of the body is contained within the pericardium? Brain, eyeball, knee, or heart?
I don't know the answer to that. But maybe cardium suggests maybe the heart then, maybe, does it?
It does, well done.
Okay, so I would say I probably said my dad's liver is on his left knee, his kidneys are on his elbows, and his spleen's on the side of his head. Still, his heart's in the right place.
They're all gold. It's not even that. Is it pericardium? I thought that was something that Siamese twins wear. More clever. That was good, wasn't it?
You could say that in 1997, couldn't you?
One more. What is origami? Is it a miniature tree, paper folding, a martial art, or a sweet herb?
It's paper.
Paper folding. Yep. Thank you for filling that.
The advantage of easy origami is twofold. Is that the one on there?
You had, I had an origami business, but it folded. It looked good on paper.
Oh, the topper from Porter.
Yeah, no. You saved it with the topper there. So, I've got more. We can always use those later. We can have those as a little fun extra in the interval. So we loved Whittle, and we've talked to you about that. But since we last spoke, I saw another game show, not a quiz show, that you did.
Right.
Channel 4.
Which one? Which?
The one that you devised as well.
Fluke.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Fluke was a show where everyone was given just 50-50 chances all the way through it, so no one had any clue what it was. It was entirely fluked, and there would be quite good prizes. It'd be like, I don't know, like a pair of motorbikes or something at the end, and the final question could have been something like, I've got something sellotaped to my arm. Is it a golf tee or a feather? And you'd see this person in front of me shaking, trying to work out what it was before I reveal it, you know.
Yes.
So that was good fun. But
and you had celebrity guests sort of doing little VTs with you.
Yeah, we did. There was a round where I'd say something like, when Ant and Dec have an argument, do they make up by hugging or shaking hands? And then the person would guess, and then we'd say, well, let's have a look. And then you see a little clip of me breaking up a fight between Ant and Dec and them both hugging me. So yeah, that was great fun. I mean, we did. There was only one series of it, so we did, I think, maybe 7 or 8 episodes or something in total. But those bits going out and videoing the people were great fun, because we were meeting people like I remember doing a little video clip with Norman Wisdom, unbelievably, and Victor Kiam, who was just this extraordinary bloke. We met him in a hotel. He was an extraordinary chap, and we were transfixed. When we came out afterwards, it was like we all felt like we'd met Frank Sinatra. He had so much charisma. And he told us that people were always giving him, because you know he did that. He was sort of an inventor and.
Sort of entrepreneur.
Exactly,
and so people I liked it so much I bought the company.
That's it, yeah. Remington Steel, yeah. But people were constantly trying to suggest inventions to him. And he said one time someone said to him, look, I've got this amazing invention. I want you to meet me at such and such a hotel and room, da-da-da, you know. I don't think it was more specific than da-da-da. And he never found him. No, he gave him a number. So he went along and it was really cloak and dagger stuff. Like, it was incredibly, this is going to be extraordinary, whatever this is. Victor Kiam sort of sat in the room, and the guy turned all the lights off and went into the bathroom and was there for a while, and then he came out holding a watering can with a torch on the end of it. But so he was fantastic, Victor Kiam, wasn't he?
Ideas go. No,
I think it's quite a good one. Yeah.
Dragon's Den was very different back then.
I'm always fascinated whenever you meet someone who's managed to get a game show or a quiz show on telly to hear about the process.
Well, I don't know what the process was really, because if I knew, I'd probably do another one, be doing another one now, because I really enjoy it. But at the time, for some reason, that Channel 5 wanted me to do a game show, and I'd put the Fluke idea before them as an idea, which I'd sort of worked on with Thames Television, as it was at the time, and they realised that you couldn't do the Fluke thing for 5 days a week. They wanted something, they call it a strip show or something, do they? That sounds something. Is that what they call it?
That's what they call it when it's on every day.
Yeah, so...
Because Beat the Chasers would be that.
Yeah, beyond...
Because you
Monday to Friday.
Because you can do loads of them, I suppose, is the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you couldn't do loads of the fluke thing. So the fluke thing kind of got shelved and ended up being taken up by Channel 4. So there was a moment there where I was doing two at once. Yeah, I know. Imagine that. Now I'm not doing any. But yeah. It was great fun.
Well, we were absolutely desperate to get Whittle back on the telly.
I'm not that desperate myself.
No, we're desperate to see you doing it. But then I did see the idea of whittling down 100 people to one winner has been stolen by... You know,
various.
Your friend and mine.
Oh, Lee's thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I did have a couple of people say to me, hang on a minute, that's Whittle he's doing with the 1% club. I mean, there was a very big difference in that Whittle, we used to say, you could win £250 with the possibility of doubling it to 500. And that was like half an hour of television.
Yes.
So the
pointless is still about the same, actually.
But but you can win proper money on Lee's thing. But
and also, yeah, it's kind of lateral thinking and tricksy questions. I mean, it is very different, but it just goes to show, though, people love to see that kind of...
But there was also 1 versus 100 and Impossible.
Exactly.
So that's...
Exactly. Yeah,
so they're all standing on the shoulders of Giant.
Of course.
Exactly, standing on the shoulders of Whittle.
But there were plenty of... I mean, it's funny, that thing. One of the game shows I've loved the most is Deal or No Deal, because it seems that most game shows, most quiz shows, I know there's a difference between quiz shows and game shows, but it's all about asking questions with general knowledge. And I just thought it was such a clever thing that there's just no questions involved. I mean, the banker thing is such a clever device, and I missed that show. I thought it was great.
There's one question, Deal or No Deal.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it's just
over
the
and
same
over again.
Throughout. But it's on its way back.
Is it?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. With Mr. Mulhern.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know if it'll have that same cult appeal as well. It was a cult, wasn't it, when Noel did it?
Yeah.
He made it into a cultish environment by coming up with all sorts of weird lingo. And they were all locked in a hotel together for weeks on end, weren't they? Oh, I'd love a behind-the-scenes documentary about that.
Yeah.
Let's get some ex-contestants on.
But I know what you mean about, because I watched it. I went to Australia for the Melbourne Comedy Festival about 10 years ago. I was there, and they had Deal or No Deal then. And I thought to myself, oh, I love this show. And I switched it on, and it just wasn't the same at all. I think they were giving prizes at the end of every box or something, and there just was no build like there is. So maybe it really does rely on Noel Edmonds' skill and stuff. I don't know.
But yeah, sort of on in the afternoon as well. It feels like a guilty pleasure in that time slot. It's the same as why Tipping Point, I think, has become such a long-standing hit. It's because it is daft as a brush, but they've come up with all these interesting little bits of lingo to go with it. So every time you watch it, you're like, oh, that's a rider. Oh, no, you don't want to go in that drop zone, love.
Drop.
But also the great thing about Tipping Point is Ben Shepherd. And my mum, she has her absolute favourites. She loves you guys, by the way. On The Chase, she absolutely loves The Chase, loves Bradley, loves Ben Shepherd. So I mean, that thing of an old person living on their own and loving a host, and the way they just, that friendliness and stuff is that's a great service that you're providing there.
Well, I'm sure Ben will send his love. He will be listening.
Really?
He's always listening.
All right, I remember saying to him once about the Tipping Point thing, that in the early series, and I'm sure that this was nothing to do with me, that it changed, but in the early series, it felt like when they cut to that machine, there was no human in the same shot. So I remember saying to him, it could be the size of a small... I said, you need to get the people in front of it or something, you know. And that did make a difference when that happened. I'm sure it wasn't me, but that was a... Because it used to cut to this just totally, and it could have been on a desk somewhere.
No idea of scale.
Yeah.
Well, didn't they? They started off with someone in the machine, or there was some change in format, wasn't there, Jen?
In the early stage of the pilot, it was being operated literally by a dude.
Who was like, oh, right, we drop the counter in on when you hit him.
We adore Tipping Point. I mean, the thing is, actually, those sort of... Because the gimmick of Tipping Point is... It is quite daft when you look at it, but it really sustains, doesn't it? And one thing we were talking about before we came out was when I've had ideas for game shows and quiz shows and stuff, I've often heard, but it's not a whole show. And you've experienced that as well, haven't you?
Well, I was just saying, we were discussing things before it came on, I had this idea for a show called The Object of the Game, was what I thought that it could be called. The Object of the Game, and people come in and give me objects and I talk about them, and then at the end the audience votes what their favourite one is, and that's the object of the game, and they're and they're the winner. And I realised as I was explaining it that it could well be part of a show.
We say it's like the repair shop, but nothing gets repaired.
Nothing gets repaired, yeah, like Antiques Roadshow without any valuation or antiques.
I think it's got legs, I really do. Well, the reason we were talking about that was because we were discussing 3-2-1, because when we were coming up, lovely producer Amanda, thank you for doing the fingers, sir. There we go, 3-2-1. Yes. We always try and come up with little games to play with our guests, and we said, oh, what about 3-2-pun? But then Amanda found out that that's the thing that actually existed.
Well, I did a pilot for something called 3-2-pun, which, as I began to think about it, was a little bit like what I've recently thought was my idea of the object of the game. But I think possibly the object of the game is a bit similar to 3-2-pun. I think people came on, it's such a long time ago I can't quite remember, but I remember chatting to the contestants. That was quite a big thing of it, was the chat and the laugh you have chatting to people. Then they had an object and maybe I had to try and come up with puns for it. Then they left, I think.
But people came, people went, objects.
Yeah, yeah. That was about the upshot of it, yeah. And there was a shelf behind me, I'd put the objects there. And surprisingly, that never saw the light of day.
Well, again, 3-2-1 is something that we feel might be ripe for a revival.
Yeah, there was always felt there was a flaw in that, though, didn't there? Because, wasn't there?
Well, the whole thing, really, was... Well,
I just never understood it.
Yeah.
So the clues, that was the thing everyone laughed about, was that the clues were so weird and tenuous that no one really ever worked out through any logic where the bin was.
Only Connect now to be baffled.
Right.
It's a huge hit. So yes. I think going off that trend, yeah. People like to watch something go, nope.
No.
Still, nope. You've explained it to me. Nope.
For the younger listeners, it was based on a Spanish show.
Was it?
And
it would have made as much sense in Spanish, and I can't speak Spanish.
No. And they used to have sort of, people would do a sort of variety turn, and then they'd come on with an object and then give a cryptic clue, which was meant to lead you to a prize, and it could be a good prize or it could be the booby prize, which was Dusty Bin. But they were completely, Michael Sheen said it was like, it felt like it was watching a seance.
But it's true, I don't think I ever saw someone talk through, well, I think it's this, 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 and this, and Ted Rogers go, correct. Yeah. I just never saw that happen. He'd go, well, no, actually.
Rain Britain Quiz had a baby with a cryptic crossword.
Yes.
Crossed with an old-fashioned variety show.
Yeah, with the wheel tappers and shunters. Yeah.
That's right, there were things like that going on, weren't there? Yeah.
I love the fact somebody enjoyed a mention of the wheel tappers and shunters. Yeah.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Now, I feel like we should play another game with you.
Yes, let's go for it.
So we didn't go for 3-2 pun in the end. We thought what we would do, which we sometimes do with our guests, is create a quiz which is tailored to your special interests.
Right.
And I know that two things that you enjoy are Elvis.
I do.
You do a show.
I do enjoy Elvis.
Yes.
Very much.
And tell us about your show.
I do an Elvis tribute act called Plastic Elvis. Mm-hmm. And I've got a band, a five-piece band, who are just absolutely brilliant. I come on wearing a sort of black plastic jumpsuit and a wig. I try my hardest to do an impression of Elvis. I mean, I'm not... It's the whole thing really is a vanity project for me. It's not really... this is kind of the look you're giving here. This is taking me... It's often the look I get when I walk on dressed as Plastic Elvis. And I talk as Elvis throughout the entire thing. And I'm always, it's fantastic to be here, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. It's all that, you know. And I just talk about stuff. And so it's not really... There's no puns. It's sort of funny in between, but I don't bill it as comedy because otherwise people turn up and go, "What the hell was that?" but if you come along and you're expecting an Elvis tribute act with a few chuckles, then I suppose it probably helps if you like Elvis in the first place and maybe like me a bit. But yeah. That's a weird Venn diagram, I've got to tell you.
I mean, if I die before you, I was going to say I hope I do. I don't. But I...
Wow.
I think you're right. Tall people generally live as long as short
men
people.
Men and tall people are you're doomed. Yeah. But if you outlive me, I would like you to sing If I Can Dream at my funeral.
Well, that's very... has it got to be that one? Because I don't actually do that one.
How long have you got to learn it?
I could learn it for you. I've never been a massive fan of that song, actually.
Have you not?
Not really. Impossible Dream, I think we might do on the next... Because we're doing it December the 4th.
I won't be there, so it won't really
matter.
That's
true. December the 4th, I'm doing Plastic Elvis at the Half Moon in Putney.
Great venue.
Very London-centric. So come along and I think we may well... We're going to try one or two new ones. We might do Impossible Dream. To dream the impossible dream. To fight the unbeatable foe. And the siren goes by on time. But yeah, so it's great fun. I enjoy it.
So that is...
It's not a money spinner. It's just, you know, good fun.
Why not? Not everything has to be about money, does it? And then the other thing...
Why am I here?
Yeah, I was getting that in early. Not everything's about money, Tim, is it? Sometimes just a bag of crisps is all you need.
Exactly, yeah.
Some off-brand sweets. And the other thing you like is, of course, darts.
I love darts, yeah.
We've seen you playing in Edinburgh at the festival.
Well, this is interesting. I would say this about Lucy. Lucy, it turns out, jump in if I've got this wrong, but whenever you go to Edinburgh, you like to learn some sort of skill during the run. Is that fair to say?
I do.
And one year, she sidled up to me somewhere in a bar and said, this year it's darts. I wonder whether you could give me some coaching tips. You threw three darts, and I basically said I couldn't help you, and that was all I saw of you that month. But it wasn't a great setup at the bar, actually, was it? It was barely sort of, you know, there was a pool table in the way, and
it was not ideal. But I have.
Have you been playing since?
I have kept it up. Yes, I've got my local.
Well done.
So what I've done is I've got a quiz for you and Jenny to participate in, which combines their questions about either darts or Elvis.
Great.
Or both. Okay, so Jenny, how do you feel about darts and Elvis?
I enjoy their work. However, I wouldn't say they were specialty subjects of mine. We're not the band darts, right?
Oh, they were good, weren't they? Yeah,
that would be fine.
The game darts.
Name me a dart song.
Daddy Cool, first single I ever bought, actually.
So let's have a question about darts / Elvis. Very simple one to start with.
Darts / Elvis sounds a bit violent. Sounds like a terrible headline somewhere. Anyway, yeah. Yes, go on.
Which former professional darts player used the nickname Elvis? Well, I thought this was going to be easy.
Which former?
Professional darts player used the nickname Elvis. A Welsh former professional darts player. He used the nickname Elvis after his favourite singer, Elvis Presley. He was born on the 12th of December, 1966.
It's not Leighton Rees, clearly. Welsh. So former professional's interest. He's given it up now, is he?
According to the other thing, I'm now doubting all of this. I don't know, yes. I'll tell you.
Any ideas?
No.
It was Robert Hughes.
Gosh.
And no wonder he went by Elvis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right, no, well. That's a very, very good and specific question.
The intersection of your interests and still nothing.
Yeah, that certainly showed a large gap in my knowledge.
Let's try this one, yeah, see if it's a bit easier. How old was Elvis when he died? Yeah. And what are the options of a too dark finish with that number?
Well, he was 42. You could go 10 double 16. You could go 20 double 11. You could go 2 double top. You could go 6 double 18. You could go 2 darts, did you say?
2 dart finish, yeah.
Well, I suppose you could go, if you were being really ridiculously flash, double 13, double 8.
Okay, yeah, you've covered all the ones that I had there. I'm afraid, Jenny, you didn't get a look in.
I didn't know whether you were supposed to buzz in there. I blurted. Sorry, Jenny.
That's absolutely fine by me. That sounded kind of like maths. So,
well, I've got a very special question coming up for you, Jen. Don't worry. Next question: in the 2022 Forbes list of top earning dead celebrities, Elvis is number 4. Can you name any of the top 3? I'll give you a clue. There is one author, one sports person, American sports person, and one other pop star.
Muhammad Ali.
Not Muhammad Ali, but that's
what
a great
year
guess.
Did you say?
So 22, last year.
Oh, well, maybe Michael Jackson, was he one?
No, he was very high, and then a few years ago he dropped out of the top for reasons we won't go
Frank
into.
Frank Sinatra?
Not Frank Sinatra. Not John Lennon. These are all great guesses. Not Tupac.
Probably this year
there'll be a renewed interest,
won't there? Yeah. Someone said Roald Dahl over there. I thought that was a good call. Roald Dahl?
No.
J.R. Tolkien.
Tolkien was the right answer. Apologise if anyone else got that, but well done, Jen. The American sports star died relatively recently. Kobe Bryant, the audience get that one. And the pop star... Oh,
Prince.
Prince, was it?
Not Prince.
Can you give it a clue?
David Bowie.
Oh.
There we go. They were too quick for you, guys.
Yeah.
Too quick for you. Okay, here's another one. How high should a dartboard be from the floor? And what's the difference in inches between that and the height of Elvis Presley?
I'm going to say 5 inches.
Do you know the height? Because I can't think what it is. I know
Is it like 5'6" to the middle?
To the bull, maybe.
Yeah.
Right.
Is it the distance to the bull?
It is the distance from the floor to the bull, yes.
And is that right? 5 foot? Is that right?
5'6"?
No, it's not 1 inch. That is the wrong answer.
I think the answer might be... No, in fact, the distance... It's got to be quite a bit more than that. It's got to be about 30 inches, the difference in height. The height of the top of the board in that case. Sorry, right, okay. In that case, the top of the board is probably about an inch taller than he is.
No, so... you know, never set a quiz about something you know nothing about whatsoever. That's a top tip. So I think 5'8" is how high a dartboard, the bull of a dartboard should be.
The bull, right, okay. Yeah. But you weren't asking about Elvis's height above the bull, were you?
I was asking what's the difference between that height and Elvis's height.
The bull or the...
The bull.
Or the top.
So 5'8" and Elvis's height.
Well, I think he was 6 foot, actually, just over. But he would say he was 6'1". There's talk that perhaps he wasn't. He was just about 6.
Your answer then would be 6 inches.
Let's say 6 foot.
So then 5'8". So
if
that's
you've made this about the height
inches
of Russ Abbott, I'd have been all over it.
I know. the height
6 foot
of Russ Abbott.
6'4".
Yeah. I wonder why we know that. Maybe we'll find out in the second half. No, you're wrong. Jen, do you want to have a guess? It's not 4 inches, which is what I think.
3 inches.
It is 3 inches. Elvis was 4'11". 5'11".
4'11"?
Elvis was 5'11".
He was 5'11".
They stood him next to the tipping point machine.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. You say he's 5'11".
5'11". Well, I did verify that from a few different sources.
Oh, very good.
So he's going to fight you now for lying about Elvis.
Do you know how big his feet were?
No.
He was at size 12.
Gosh, that's a large foot.
Well, and the other one as well.
Okay, one more. Should we do one more question?
Actually, it might be 12, American 12, and I think of it, which is 10 probably, is it? No, is a size 12... 11, is it? Okay, so maybe it was 11.
No, not that big.
Yeah, nothing.
Not that impressive. Okay, final question is, can you work out how many days Elvis lived for? Divide that figure by 180, round it down, you get a two-digit number, and if Elvis had lived to that age, who would have been the PDC World Darts Champion on his birthday?
Phil the Power Taylor.
That's a very it's almost certainly that's the best guess, isn't it? Because he won 16
that's,
of them.
That's your percentage answer. That
slightly. So he
less
lived for 15,561 days.
Right.
You divide that by 180, you get 86.458. So Elvis would have been 86 on the 8th of January 2021.
Oh. Ah, so maybe it's Rob Cross.
Nope.
2021. It's Van Gerwen.
Nope.
Peter Wright. Yes, Peter Wright.
Nope.
Oh.
Going Price.
Going Price.
Very
of
nice.
Of course, the year of the COVID thingy.
Yeah, congratulations to that. Shall we give a prize to the audience member?
Absolutely, definitely.
What would you like, my darling?
Ooh, chocolate.
Chocolate for Mark there. There
we
go. It's the bubbly man.
Thank you. Well done.
There we go. Well,
yikes.
That was a surprisingly difficult.
It was,
Elvis and darts.
Grueling is what I'd call it.
Mostly for the quizmaster.
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed putting the pressure on you.
They were really spring-off points for the questions, weren't they? Darts and Elvis.
Yeah.
So that was kind of. They were generally maths questions.
Yes, I really didn't know enough about darts and Elvis. Next time you're on, I will do a more thorough research.
Well, I enjoyed it either way.
No. So now, listen, we didn't talk to you last time about the quizzes that you enjoy and the quizzes that you loved growing up. So I thought, ask you about...
Do you know what? One of the ones that I really loved growing up was Strike It Lucky, was it called, or Strike It Rich? Was
it Strike It Lucky
with Barrymore. Yeah. And the reason why, and I used to love... It's the same reason I used to like this Generation game as well, was because I was really into the host messing about with the contestants. And I remember some episodes with Barrymore where he would really mess about for, it seemed like, the first half of the quiz, and then he'd run up and down that ramp, which was the least interesting bit in a way.
Yeah.
That's why, similarly, like Play Your Cards Right with Brucey, and just that whole thing of looking down the lens, and I loved all that,
Well, I loved
Larry Grayson, of course.
Bringing it back to Whittle is the fact that with your contestant chat, because I think we can all agree, often contestant chat is the worst bit of a quiz show, because it is like, oh, you've got a funny story about the time you met Nick Knowles, and nobody's
haven't
got
we
that.
All?
Yeah. None of them are suitable for broadcast. But what I loved on Whittle was that you always did a different question.
When it used to get down to the last 10 people were in the second half, it was just, obviously it'd be quite easy to eliminate and get down to one person quite quickly. So there had to be a way of killing a bit of time there. So it was decided that you would ask each of the 10 people one question, and it would be something like, what's your favourite aeroplane or something? I don't know what it would be.
Well, one that I really liked was, what's your favourite time of day, but very specifically, day of the week and time.
Right.
And people had to say, and I thought that's such a lovely question, isn't it? Because a lot of people said, Friday afternoon, clocking off time.
Mm.
Then there was one woman who very specifically said 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night, because that was when she went to the pub.
Right. Right.
Which was very sweet.
I have to say, my memory of doing those bits was that, particularly in Whittle, which I enjoyed doing Whittle because it was the experience was great fun, but the problem with having an audience who are also the contestants is that the focus goes a bit sometimes, because they're really focusing on the game, and so you're trying to get laughs from people really who are thinking about something else. My memory of asking 10 questions to those people is that a lot of the time it was like wading through concrete. We did have one thing, actually, I might have told you this last time I was here, actually, where they struggled to get people on the show, and they got a whole load of Japanese students on who from a local school, Japanese from a local language school, and a lot of them couldn't speak English. So the thing of pressing, you had a choice of four answers and you press a button. So it happened that when it got to that second half, we had 10 people left. One of them, bless him, was one of these Japanese students who could not speak a word of English at all. And the first question, which is supposed to keep everyone in, was which of these women's names is a Christmas song? And of course, Carol was there, and 9 people pressed Carol. And this poor chat presses Brenda or something, and I'm supposed to then chat to him about it. You press Brenda, yeah. But chatting to the audience is always good fun.
And they always said that they'd just pressed the wrong button. No one ever admitted that they got the question wrong.
No, no. That was a slightly weird thing sometimes when you go to someone and go, so why did you press that? Oh, I don't know. I don't know.
Yes.
You know, sometimes people would press a button that you think to yourself, how is that possible that you don't know? You've never heard of...
Well, that one about the Taj Mahal, you know, what's the closest city? And a surprising number of people said Aberdeen.
Right.
Even more people said Andover.
Really?
I thought it was a trick geography question, like in a straight line. But yeah. they didn't read beyond Andover. getting quick on this.
Well, there is that as well as the speed thing, isn't it? Where people go, oh, I better do it quickly. And then they realise, like you say, they've just hit the wrong thing. Well, they might have read it and thought, well, it's that one there, is that button there. I know it's not, it's the wrong button.
Yeah. Well, the final round was quite good as well, because the final round was you had to put four things in order.
Oh, yeah, you're reminding me now. I'd forgotten about that, yeah.
And that sort of quite often went wrong for people because under the pressure of time. Shall I give you an example?
Yes, please,
I've got an example. Let me flick back. So...
I feel very privileged to have been on this show twice talking about Whittle. No one ever asked me about it once, never mind. And he's back again. It's your Whittle hero, folks. What do you say?
Well, it stands up very well. It really does. You've got to rank the elements in the air we breathe from highest to lowest. And you give the numbers. So you give the number sequence that corresponds. So elements in the air we breathe from highest to lowest. And your choices are 1, oxygen. 2, argon. 3, nitrogen. 4, carbon dioxide. So
highest amount in the air.
The highest percentage in the air, yeah.
Okay. So just one more time.
Oxygen, argon, nitrogen, carbon dioxide.
So presumably oxygen and carbon dioxide are going to be in the top two, are they, one way or other? No? Oh, dear.
No.
Nitrogen's going to be in the top two.
Nitrogen is very much in the top two.
Okay, so nitrogen and oxygen are the top two. No?
Yep.
No?
Yep.
Yes?
Yep.
So is the top one oxygen?
No.
Nitrogen's the top one?
Yep.
Then oxygen?
Yep.
You had no idea how much nitrogen you were breathing on a daily basis.
No. I imagine carbon dioxide might be next. No. It's not argon, surely.
It is argon.
Is it?
And I don't think anybody got that right, or if it was a very small percentage of people. Obviously, this audience tonight, much more knowledgeable.
Different demographic there.
Yeah.
Not pulled from the streets.
One where the first question of the second half, everybody got it wrong, so everybody was out. And so it went to this weird tape stop, and I thought, I wonder what's going on here. And someone came up to me and said, Tim, everybody's out. So you're going to have to fill the next 10 minutes somehow. So I just stood there and did my act for 10 minutes. I'd love to. That was one of the episodes.
It's probably the best thing that's ever been on Channel 5 before or since, isn't it? And so I can't remember if you've done Mastermind.
Yes, I did it. Well, Elvis was the topic the first time, and then the second time I did it with Jaws.
Wow. And how did you get on?
Well, as anyone will say, when you do the celebrity versions of this, it is all a bit sort of a bit light in terms of... I mean, everyone does well with their own subjects.
Yes.
Generally, you might get one or two wrong if you're having a nightmare, but generally they make that bit easy. So really, it's all on the general knowledge. And you either know or you don't. You guys presumably love that moment because you get everything right at that point.
She does. She does, yes.
So I think I did all right on the first time. The second time, all the general knowledge questions, I was flailing around.
Aww.
Yeah.
Who beat you?
Now, I can't remember her name, but she hosts Points of View at the moment. Very intelligent woman.
It's not Samir Ahmed, no.
Yes, it is.
Is it Samir Ahmed? Oh, my God, she's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. So we were out of our depth immediately.
The rightful host of University Challenge, that's all I'm saying. I think we have talked to you about quizzing, and we love your quiz hosting, so it's time to give you a chance to do that.
Gosh, okay.
So Amanda, our fabulous producer, has prepared a quiz which neither Jenny nor I have seen. It's if you flip over that bit of paper, it's under there. And, you know, make of it what you will, take the floor.
Who are the contestants? Everyone.
It's mainly Jenny and I, but I suspect that we will
the audience
need...
might have to be contestant number three.
Yeah, we will need help from the audience. So,
right, here we go.
So it's called...
What's My Vine?
What's My Vine?
Hello and welcome to What's My Vine? Have I gone in too quick? Is that too much?
No, love it. Love it.
Hello and welcome to What's My Vine? My name's Tim Vine and I am the host of What's My Vine. I've got a sister called Bo, stupid cow. Tim? Right, okay. So all of the questions are going to be slightly connected with the word vine,
okay.
I think is the idea. So question one. Barbara Vine is the pseudonym of which British writer whose books under that name include King Solomon's Carpet. By the way, I went to the carpet shop. I said, do you sell carpets by the yard? He said, no, we sell them in here. King Solomon's Carpet, A Fatal Inversion, and Astor's Book.
Oh.
Clue if it's, needed.
It's either it's
yes.
one or the other.
It's the other. So is it P.D. James
or Ruth Rendell?
Or Ruth Rendell, yes. It's one of those.
I can never remember which one.
Well, the name of the show is What's My Line? It's not called It's One or the Other. That'd be good, though, wouldn't it? Welcome to It's One or the Other. audience, what do you think? Any ideas? Ruth Rendell's correct. No, one to the audience. No. Question two. In 2002, Australian rock group The Vines featured on the cover of US Rolling Stone. It was the first time a band from Oz were cover stars of the publication since 1983. Who were the band which featured in that year, 1983?
It's a bit early for an excess. Isn't it too early for
Can
an
I
excess?
Say also that I have written down here, clue if needed.
Oh, okay.
So I think I was thinking maybe I shout clue if needed and you go, give it to me.
Men at Work.
I think it could be like a catchphrase.
Okay.
Men at Work.
Clue if needed.
Clue
give
if
it
needed.
To me.
Give it to me. Yeah. Not
although I agree with that somebody from the audience has just said what I think it. But tell
what
us
was
the clue.
It?
Well, tell us the clue. But
well, the clue is their
the
most
one.
Famous song was subject to a court case on account of an uncredited appropriation of another song for the flute line. I didn't know that. Yeah, well, what song did that come from? Was that a James Galway classic or something? No, but that was taken from somewhere else. We know it was Down Under, but... Anyway, question three. And the answer was Men at Work. The song is Down Under. Right, question three. Where can one find the 250-year-old The Great Vine, which is the largest grape vine in the world, planted in 1768, while Lancelot Capability Brown was in charge of the grounds? I don't see as much of that person anymore.
Is it going to be Hampton Court?
I don't see Lancelot. And the answer, you didn't even need the clue. It is indeed Hampton Court Palace. Question four. Which song was first recorded in 1966 by The Miracles?
I heard it through the grapevine.
Well, let's not... let's not as you know, you're frozen out if you jump in. Another one of my catchphrases. You're frozen out if you jump in. Looks down the lens. Well, anyway, the answer... that's correct. Yes, it was their version not being released until 1968, which is the same year. Another artist released the song, making it a soul classic. And the answer is, I heard it through the grapevine, Marvin Gaye released his version on the 1968 album. What's the name of the album, Lucy? Do you know that?
What's Going On?
What's Going On? Is anyone...
No, the album is called In the Groove.
Oh,
welcome,
good.
If you've just joined us. This is What's My Vine. Question five. We all remember sharing our favourite vines on Twitter. I don't.
We sure do.
But what was Vine an abbreviation of?
Video news.
Video news is wrong. Anyone in the audience?
Bovine.
Bovine is wrong.
One of your earlier.
It was. I can say a clue if needed.
Give it to me.
The clue is, this is defined as a short impressionistic scene.
Vignette.
Correct.
Oh, yes,
vignette.
Very good.
It's not really an abbreviation of vignette, is it? It's got some of the same letters, but it's not really... Anyway, we won't argue about that, but the answer is vignette. That's correct. Well done, Jenny. Okay, question six. Which famous Vine played the drums in a band called The Flared Generation? The group... Oh, hang on. The group... Well, now you've given me a choice here. The group was described by Smash Hits as the most unfashionable punk band in the country. His also famous brother is on Radio 2. So you're wrong, I'm afraid. No, you are absolutely right. His also famous brother was a member of the band too. That's very kind. But anyway, Jeremy Vine is the answer, and that was a band short-lived. Okay. And the answer was the Flared Generation. Yes, Jeremy Vine. He played the drums. And question seven is the...
What did you do?
What did I do? I played guitar, and I sang. And then we had... in fact, Jeremy sang sometimes as well, and then we had someone else on the drums. So Jeremy was sometimes on the drums, but when we did one of the four gigs that we did ever, we had our mate on the drums who couldn't play the drums, and then Jeremy singing and me on guitar. And the thing that most struck you when you listened to that was it really needed some bass. And less amplification. And I was about to read question seven, then I realised it says here, tiebreaker. So there was no need for it, but we'll read it anyway. Who did I choose as my specialist subject on my first appearance on Celebrity Mastermind? I've answered this one earlier. Sure, there we are. I thought, yes, and the answer is Elvis Presley. Oh, this person also inspired one of my performances on Comet Relief Does Fame Academy. What did I sing on that?
Oh,
Suspicious Minds.
Well, no.
It's now or never.
Well, I agree. We need to get on with it. No, it was Viva Las Vegas is the answer.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
There we are. And that is What's My Vine?
As ever, if any commissioners are in the room, let us know.
Yes. I've got a feeling that you can't get more than two episodes out of that just because of the sheer thing. Everything's got to be Vine-related.
Not a whole show, as they say. Yes, it's
part of a show, isn't it?
It's part of a show. That's what we've done there. But yeah, absolutely fantastic to see you hosting that.
Thank you.
I think congratulations from Jen and I would go to the audience who won that.
Well done.
But we're all winners at the end of the day because we've spent time in the company of Tim Vine.
Yes.
And it's been an absolute joy and a delight.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've always loved the two of you. I have. I think you're great.
We hope to see you hosting more, doing more, and we're all going to come and see Plastic Elvis, right?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you to Tim Vine.
Fingers on Buzzers starred Lucy Porter and Jenny Ryan and was produced by Amanda Redman, with music by Kevin MacLeod and Justin Edwards. Email quiz@fingersonbuzzers.com and tweet @fingersbuzzers. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to join us next time for more Fingers on Buzzers.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.